It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock from Phoenix, Arizona, here in the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, where there's all kinds of goodies, all kinds of goodies. We got, you know, there's a lot of good stuff on Freedom. You know, I can't, you know, I tell you what it's like. When you're in school and back in the day when you used to have encyclopedias, and, you know, I got to share this. When I was probably about 6 years old, my parents bought an encyclopedia. And it's always a door-to-door salesman. They were going around with World Book Encyclopedia, and they come around, you know, and they knock on your door. And they go, you don't want to deprive your children of, encyclopedia. If you're good parents, you'll get this encyclopedia that'll cost a gazillion dollars and all the whiz-bangs and stuff that come with it. And so my parents did. They got a World Book Encyclopedia. A copy that we still have. What happened is, of all the information that is available and being added to the wealth of knowledge to humanity, the encyclopedia never really got any bigger. I mean, it'd fill, you know, one, two shelves on a bookshelf. And you'd think with all the stuff that goes on around all over the world and so on, that, you know, it just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, like all the information on the Internet. But what happened was it I guess they just figured, well, you know, we'll summarize some stuff. And my grandmother, when I was young in the 60s, living in Florida, my grandmother, I go over there, she had an old Britannica. And the Britannica had, I think it was, had to be 40s, 50s or something. It was an old one. And as you look through stuff like that on different issues, I'd have access to that when I was in grade school. And I would go, you know, our World Book one, and then you go check that one. And there was a bunch more history that got summarized from pages in an old encyclopedia, got cut down to a paragraph, even in the World Book that I got in the late 60s. And by now, you're lucky if they even mention it. Oh, yeah, and there was this guy that was president from this year to this year, and then we go on to whatever else they wanted to tell you. When I had the opportunity to buy an encyclopedia and so on, it was my children are starting in school. We had our kids in the mid-80s, so they're starting school in the early 90s. And what did I get? I got encyclopedia on CD. And you got we got a full thing. God, this is back when it was Windows 3.1 or something, you know, operating system. And that was before Windows 98 and all that is back in the day. And we got these CDs, and you were able to search it, you know, by subject and so on. And we got one that was the entire National Geographic that was PDF'd, I guess. It was every single page was photographed and put into a searchable database. And I'm going, this is cool. I mean, you have National Geographics from back in the day all on CD, and you could just search whatever you wanted. You're looking about something. Remember the one picture of the green-eyed Afghanistan girl that they always put on the front of lots of National Geographic promotions and so on? Well, they went a few years ago, and they found that girl. And she's a woman now, of course, and has children, and she's alive. And you could tell from the picture when she was, 12, 13 or something, to now, a lot older. And you go, wow, yeah, you can tell that's the same girl. Yeah, she's still kicking. Well, you know, of course, she had no idea that her image was so popular. You know, she had no idea that, you know, the entire planet, you know, had her picture plastered before them all over the place. And but when you look at Afghanistan issues in National Geographic over the years, which for some reason I did because I was interested in that picture because we did a thing on Freedom's Phoenix. That's right. I bet if you did a search on Freedom's Phoenix for Afghanistan girl photo National Geographic, it'd come up. And I don't remember the whole story, but this is what I got out of it. The information that you get from these older magazines and reports and exposés done by National Geographic and even old encyclopedias and so on give you a far different picture and more of an intimate understanding of the different tribes involved and different regions and so on. Because the people that live in Afghanistan, they don't recognize the borders that were drawn up by map makers out of England and France. You know, they're like, what? You know, what? That's why when they have the border with Pakistan, oh, they crossed the border. They crossed what border? You know, my cousin Fred lives over there on the other side of what your line in the sand is. You know, I don't know what you're talking about. So this is just it's a Western concept that is not shared by everybody. So when you go and you do research, when you go to the internet and you look up something and it starts sending you off on tangents, I remember that feeling when I was a young man. I'd sit down and I'm doing some paper study for school or something I was just interested in, and I go and I start looking, I'm flipping through, and then you start seeing other things of interest and you start reading and you're looking at, and you forgot what you went there for. Man, I was looking for something. What was it? Oh, yeah, I remember. And then you started having to remind yourself to go ahead and make a note of what it was you were looking for so you didn't get lost. My wife, when we had gotten married in 84, and when we got married, we would talk about different things, and I started getting involved in understanding the truth of things in 88, and I'm sharing with her and the news and the 1988 campaign is the first one I really paid attention to, Dukakis and Daddy Bush and what's going on, and I didn't have any love for either of them. So I'm starting to try and get an understanding of what's being asked of us and why and where they got justification and jurisdiction and yada, 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 yada. As I'm talking with my wife, she 4 years Penn State. I mean, you know, she was getting educated, but she didn't really have an understanding of the news. Somebody'd say something about Nicaragua, and she'd go, "Wasn't that near Russia somewhere?" Well, of course you would think that because they always had it. You know, it's kind of part of the Soviet bloc, and it's communist, and they're sending money, and so you just kind of assumed that they had something to do with Russia, or she did, and just didn't really pay attention. And of course, it's in, you know, Central America, so you're going, okay, I think we need to get all caught up on this. So we talked about it and so on. I would watch the kids a couple of times a week, and she would go to a community college here called Glendale Community College. But we were poor, you know, but it was only like $60 a semester or something to go take this class, you know, twice a week. So it was like 3-hour class. And I, you know, it's not the anything other than just get the information. You know, you write your paper, sort of share with me what you learned and so on, and we'll all try to get up to speed. So she did that. She went to the class, but we couldn't afford the book. The book was like, I don't know, it was some stupid amount of money, you know, $100-something for this big book. And I go, you know, we'll just use our old encyclopedias. And this is before the internet and everything started getting going. This is the late 80s and so on. So we go, we'll just get what you can out of the class, and we can't afford this book, and we'll just go ahead and do your studies and so on with library and encyclopedia. So she goes, she takes the class. Her first paper, the professor gave her 120% on. Her second one, 110% on. He was like, wow, I had no idea, because she didn't even look at the textbook. The textbook had, it was just a propaganda de la whatever. It got to the point to where I actually went and met, you know, I was involved in politics by that time and so on, early 90s and so on, late 80s. And she had taken a couple semesters this, and I remember, I can't remember when the exact year was, but it was around 90. And I went and met with the professor, You know, she had talked to him. Would you, my husband liked to talk. Yeah, sure, you know, bring the boy on. So we went and had lunch in the cafeteria down there, and we talked, and I said, the reason she's doing so well on this, she doesn't have the textbook. She's using an old World Book Encyclopedia, and getting all the information from that, and then doing some extra research and so on. And I remember these two papers. It was on medieval times and, you know, serfs and how government was, you know, you had the castle and the people and all that kind of stuff and different. And then she did something on the Roman Empire and much more information than you got out of the textbook. When we come back, we'll talk about, in the next hour, we're going to be talking about intellectual property with an expert on that. And it's going to be very interesting. But I wanted to share what is going to frame my questions for him based on some personal experiences that I've had in accessing information and where we're going with the internet. We'll talk about it when we come back. You stay right there.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Hancock, Phoenix, Arizona here, where we're prepping ourselves for an edumacation we're going to get in the next hour from Stephen Kinsella. He is against intellectual property, okay? This has been a big debate inside the libertarian community on, can you own an idea? Can you package it? Can you patent it? Can you copyright it? And when you buy it, you know, like a music CD or a book or something, then is it yours or not yours? How many times can you copy a movie? Can you share it with friends? Can you put it on the internet? I mean, so we're going to, I intentionally have not read the article. Everybody's going on, man, you got to read that. I will right after I talk to him. Because when you read this stuff on something like this, reading is a very powerful medium, just like talk radio. As you're listening to me right now, you know, you may have a comment or you may even want to take notes or you'll go look at stuff that I talk about on the internet or you'll go to today's archive shows and we'll have all the headlines of different things that we're referring to that you can go and do some more research and stuff. We try and make that easy on you. But you're not sitting there looking at me across from the table and thinking of what you're going to say and interjecting into the conversation, going back and forth. There's like a persuasion thing going on, or you might be asking questions and you want to know something, but it interrupts the train of thought, or you have a something you want to input and you want to get your idea across, so you're not really listening to what's being said. And that's why talk radio is such a powerful medium, because you get it one way input into your brain. You got like, Lord forbid, you're listening on headphones, you're not hearing anything else or distraction. It's like, just listen to me. And you have a soothing voice that penetrates the ideas that I want to share with you and to become part of your brain. Blah, blah, blah. See the point? So it's a powerful medium, and the one reason why I don't take a lot of calls is because it kind of distracts from where the message that I'm trying to relay. And then, of course, sometimes I'll, you know, encourage you to call in. And go ahead and take the number down, because you may want to talk to this gentleman and ask some questions in the second half of the second hour. You know, so like a little over an hour from now. It's 866-986-6397, 866-986-NEWS, 866-986-6397. And we'll save some calls for like an hour from now. Because this is a really good point. And it's been debated. How many libertarians can dance on the head of a pin? Okay. When it comes down to intellectual property, because a lot of writers, libertarian writers, oh, they're libertarian hardcore, no compromise right up until the book that they wrote, you can just take and print and give to your friends. They go, whoa, wait a minute. We need a government to enforce my property rights and my ideas, and I get to own an idea. So we're going to, this is going to be a very interesting conversation. I have yet to be able to be convinced enough that I could advocate for whatever on my own, that I would take a position, because I haven't. I'm just like, yeah, I'm sure, you know, freedom's the answer. You know, what's the question? So I always default to a freedom position. It always turns out being right. And everybody's saying, this guy, man, you like him. We're going to have him on. So I want to, how I've come to this position is that information is enormously powerful. The control of information, who gets access to information, under what circumstances can you use information? Can information be controlled? Well, there's certainly the attempt, and they'll make the argument, and they, them, those that, you know, won't leave us alone or want to get us to think a certain way, well, they'll claim it big time. Well, there is an effort on the internet now to go after websites, not necessarily like Freedom's Phoenix, because we don't reprint the entire article. We'll just do our graphic that kind of gives our editorial graphics worth 1,000 words. You can say, you know, whatever you want, and then we just put a graphic up there what we really think about it. But we don't change the headline. It just, you know, you go to a mid page and we have the headline, we have the summary, you know, what it's about, you know, what category we put it in. Then when you click on it to read more, maybe you'll have a little bit more information, and it'll have maybe a paragraph or two of what the article is, and then you can go off onto their site and read it. Well, you would think that a lot of places, and a lot of places do, they love getting their stuff linked to on Freedom's Phoenix because you get a lot of traffic. Well, there's been an entirely new area of law. And one that I'm familiar with that's just really started is a guy out of Las Vegas, an attorney, that has been signing up a lot of newspapers saying, I will search the internet for anything that is matches up to something that you put in your newspaper, certainly original content from your authors and reporters and writers and columnists and so on. And then we'll go file suit. We'll go, that's copyright violation. You've been taken, no, heck no, you can't, blah, blah, blah. Now, some blogs and so on, they would just print the entire article on there, and that, you know, kind of gets you in trouble. But there's a fair use policy. You can take a little paragraph here and there and so on, link to it. And you'd think that they would be, yay, we get more traffic, more people looking at what we want to say. You know, we're trying to convince people of whatever it is, fill in the blank anyway. So, you know, more people get eyeballs on what we want to say, the better. Well, is that true? And who would be against it? Well, there's a lot of websites that are getting attacked. They're going after them. But it's more of a political thing. They can't figure out what Freedom's Phoenix is. It's just a bunch of information. And, you know, the stories that we put up are to give you a wide radar screen of what's going on. Let the left and the right and the fascists and the communists and the socialists and the libertarians and everybody gets to have their say. But, of course, not being afraid, we know that freedom is the answer to whatever question. So we'll put it up. What's happened is that they think about how the internet really started getting going in the penetration and complement of something like talk radio. Here comes Rush Limbaugh in the 90s. He's, man, you didn't know the real stuff behind Clinton administration. Clinton bad because of fill in the blank. Well, all the reasoning that you give because they had too much government, they did too much of this, they did too much of that, whatever the reasoning was, what would happen was when the Bush administration came in or Republicans were in charge of state-by-state governors and they got the Republican governor in the House and the Senate and all, and the very things that conservatism had been defined by as a problem with the Clinton administration, the Republicans were doing, and oftentimes worse. So what's the philosophy? Well, it's vote Republican. That's a philosophy. But you had, like, the Drudge Report. Drudge was Matt Drudge. I think he, I don't know, have an apartment in L.A. from what I remember, you know, back in the day. And what was his claim to fame? How did he shoot to the top? The blue dress. Monica Lewinsky. He was the one that broke that story. And, of course, you know, he's, endeared himself to the Republicans. And a lot of the stuff you see on Drudge Report is just a headline, a couple of graphics, you know, but just a headline. Go over there. Look how bad they are. The Democrats. You see the same thing on the other side with sites like Raw Story. That's more from a left perspective. Then you have and different versions on both sides and so on. You know, Politico, a little bit more partisan. And you have like Common Dreams, very partisan on the left. You know, so, it varies. That's the beauty of the internet. Well, now they are starting to have a lot of competition of how do you infect, penetrate the matrix, the injection of the libertarian infection into the bone marrow of American politics for which there is no cure. Oh, they don't want that. How do you stop it? During the Ron Paul campaign in 08, there was, oh, it's just a few bloggers from the grandma's basement that's doing all this. Well, all of us out here, we knew that was crap. But there has to be some controls of information. It's not working for them. This trying to sell how the economy's coming back, and it's not. Intellectual property. Who controls information? This is a very important issue we're going to talk about in the top of the next hour. I got some more thoughts on it when we come back. You stay right there. It's going to be an educational day. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Communicate with each other back in the day. That's Queen, the group Queen. When I'm graduating high school in 1979, you know, it was all about the music. I had a lot of friends that were big Rush fans, and I never really understood because there was only three of them, I think. You know, it was a drummer, a lead singer, a guitarist, and a bass, and maybe there was a fourth. I think it was only three. And they, you know, and the lead singer, man, he was unattractive. But, you know, they had a big following, and you couldn't really understand a lot of the words that they said. I don't use a lot of songs with lyrics that you can't understand because, you know, what's the point? And in radio, the big thing is, you know, don't use lyrics. Nah, you never use lyrics. It's just rejoinder music, and you go in and you do no lyrics. To me, it was different. When I first started doing radio in 03, I went through all of the classic rock stuff, you know, a bunch of Boston, a bunch of, you know, Queen, Led Zeppelin, and AC/DC, you know, just whatever stuff that I listened to in high school and on that had a big impact, like Black Eyed Peas with their, you know, Where Is the Love? So these are representations of a culture of a generation expressing themselves. It's the same reason why some movies are much more popular than others. It's always, I tell you, the ones that are the big blockbusters. You know, it's Patriot and Braveheart and Matrix and Gladiator and, you know, all the Avatar. And all the reason it's always, you know, the individual against the collective. You know, it's the oppressed rising up against the oppressor. So it's something that's ingrained in us. And the Hammerfall by Queen, it was just, you know, we grew up in the shadow of the mushroom cloud. You know, we understand. You know, we just wanted to, you know, just sing out loud. We're like, hey, man, what the heck are we fighting for? What's it, you know, I understood the message. But it still was not as free as it is now because it was controlled by, you know, record labels and so on. But no matter how much you controlled the music, if nobody wanted to listen to it, you couldn't fill a stadium for it. You couldn't sell albums. It didn't make any difference. So they embraced, you know, some kind of, and that's when you had hip hop and what do they call it? Rap. Because what was got a lot of the guys very famous was this Kill a Cop stuff. You remember Charlton Heston was a shareholder in Time Warner, and he made a big campaign. What the heck are we doing making money off of these going around talking about, you know, capping the pig with my 9mm kind of thing? He's going, no. We should be making money off of this. And he had a point. I mean, you know, those people, you know, they invest in whatever. It's corporate decisions and so on. But with the Internet, it doesn't matter. They go out and do whatever. You got Eminem up there going about how 9/11 was an inside job. You got these big rappers. You don't hear a bunch of him being promoted and other stuff anymore either, but he's good. He's got his money. He don't care. So this is, there's all these record labels and the message that they want to put out and this intellectual property of who owns it, who controls it. You know, is it the band? Is it the label? Is it, you know, it's all going away and it's being diversified and democratized on the Internet to where people make the decisions. This is dangerous to those that want to control whatever the message is and any way of getting the message out. I'll give you an example. I'm proud to be an American where at least I know I'm free. How many times did you hear that after 9/11? Every single freaking sporting event. He's out there saying, I don't even know who it was, but man, he made a name for himself on that one. Then there was a time, you know, when Born in the USA, okay, remember that song by Bruce Springsteen? Well, you know, you start having politicians starting to use that, and he's going, hey, no, I don't want you using that, no, I have nothing to do with y'all. So you make a big deal out, and they'd stop using it. So this is, you know, all these different kinds of ways to communicate information is it to be in the hands of the people is dangerous to those that have been able to consolidate the control of these types of ways into your brain, you know, that they've controlled it and they don't get to do it anymore. And what are they going to do? They're going to have to change the internet. They're going to have to go after people that are able to share things and this file share and peer to peer and all this. And it's just not working. They're not, you know, because if there's information out there and somebody wants it, they're going to get it. I just, you know, I give you WikiLeaks. I don't care how secure your, you know, Pentagon files are. They're getting ready to do another big dump here. You know, then what? So this is important discussion. And I wanted to, you know, segue from my personal experiences and my wife and I, as we've grown and learned and we access information a lot, probably read a lot more than most people. And we just wanted to get up to speed. And certainly my wife, you know, the geography and history and so on, just, you know, because I thought it was important just so that we both have an understanding of the world. And we're not getting it from the lamestream media, the media that's so last century. Here come the textbooks. They're going to tell you, you know, not only what you need to discuss, but what your opinion should be on it. I have a friend we'll talk about later. He has a son that qualified. He won a national championship in kickboxing. First competition he ever went to. Now, his father, Scott, a good friend of mine, he's a black belt. And, you know, his two sons, as they grew up, he, you know, took them martial arts a little bit. They didn't like, okay, let's go play baseball and this and that. Finally, he goes back in. He starts to go through puberty. He's like 15 or something. And he's starting to develop and finding out how fast and strong he really is. Goes in, he gets training, and the coach, he says, look, man, this guy needs to go to competition. He's a butt kicker. Goes to the first competition. I think it was Atlanta, wins a national title. They're going to Scotland, and we're going to help sponsor. We're going to start promoting, trying to raise money for them. They need $4,000. You'll start seeing a bunch of stuff on Freedom's Phoenix here about it. We're getting the artwork done and pushing this. Going to get a real freedom fighter. And the next generation of people that are growing up that are going to be the leaders, and man, they're going to be leaders. Well, all of a sudden, this guy has a natural talent. I mean, you think I don't want Freedom's Phoenix logos all over his kickboxing shorts? Heck yeah. Going to Scotland, going to be world champion, going to kick some butt. So we're having some fun with that. But the real story is behind our children, the generation that I've known Scott for a long time, it's over like 12 years or so, and raised our children together, and they are the next generation. They are the ones that are going to be not only inheriting the bad stuff, expected to fix it, it'll survive it. Well, because the economy is getting down and so on, he had to pull his kids out of private school. And he was very upset about that. But he tries to, you know, go through all his homework and everything and so on. And he could see the difference. And it was all of this, this Keynesian economic stuff. So he goes, I don't care if he gets a bad grade. He goes, yeah, this is all crap. Read Hayek. And, you know, are you willing to take the hit? Not be, you know, government school approved by answering the question the way they want. And you could see from someone that's been out of it and then go back into it, go, wow, is this what they're teaching everybody? But you have access to other information. Or do you? In the early 90s, Microsoft came up with Microsoft Encyclopedia. And I was really interested in this. I'm like, all right, cool. It was one of the first CD encyclopedias. But it was Bill Gates' version of history and the encyclopedia. So we had our old versions, and we'd do some research, and we'd go look and see what they said. I said, you know, this is just trash. It's garbage. We just, you know, I don't even know what we did. I don't think we threw them away. We just put them in the attic somewhere. I haven't seen them in years. I'm sure they're laying around somewhere. I think we might have threw them away because it was just garbage. Because what they had done is they'd taken all this information and they put out a product of what they wanted you to think history was, philosophy was, positions on different things. That's powerful. If you can control the information, man, you can control minds. Okay. I always thought I was born at just the right time. 1961. You know, I was just old enough to remember a man walking on the moon. You know, the most sophisticated electronics in a car back then was the, I don't know, the spark plug and AM radio. You know, now it's, wow. I mean, you know, satellite navigation. I mean, you're talking to your car. Your car's stopping for you. Mercedes, you're kind of looking over, and you're coming up in a car, and all of a sudden it stops for you. It won't let you change lane, whatever. No, avoid collision thing. I'm not sure how I feel about that. But, you know, this is where we're going. How do we maintain our independence from all of this collective control on us driving, when you hit your brakes, how fast you can go, what information is available to you, what music you listen to, what books you can read, who controls it? You know, but things have changed. Who benefits and who's left vulnerable? We'll talk about it some more. And in the third hour, I got some other stuff I'm building up to. But in the second hour, it's going to be good. We'll have some more in just a little bit.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Declare your independence of me, Ernest Hancock, out of Phoenix, Arizona. Man, we've been sharing the love for a long time, and it's kind of penetrating, you know, around the country, around the world. Evolution is just one step of a gazillion things that we do. And it's I want to share, you know, kind of personal experience. I'm building up to our guest in the second hour, and then in the third hour, I want to play some clips and stuff for you, but I want to make sure that you can see from my eyes, and as an activist, as a father of four, two boys, two girls that are grown now, a beautiful wife that's really been supportive of this, of a family that's just looking to survive and thrive and understand the truth. That puts you in the crosshairs. Oh, yeah, sure does. But I'm not the first one. I'm not the only one, and it's in a long line of freedom fighters. And there's a gentleman I'll tell you a little bit about, and I'll put on today's archive. You go to today's archive on freedomsphoenix.com, the afternoon show for the 14th of September 2010, and you'll see, you know, different links and articles that we'll put up there, as things I'm talking about. One gentleman, his name's Leonard Reed. Leonard Reed was born in 1898 and died in 1983. He was founder of the Foundation for Economic Education, FEE. This is a very influential organization. It was the first modern libertarian think tank in the United States. Now, it was done back in right after World War II. It was in the 40, 47, I think. And what they did was just after the New Deal and all that was going, it was just, whoa, this is bad. And let me go ahead and read this. Ooh, is that me? Oh, that's bad. Don't have your phone on. Sorry about that. And what he did is he was head of the Chamber of Commerce in Los Angeles. And after, let me see, read this here. After a stint in the United States Army Air Service during World War I, Reed started a grocery wholesale business in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which was initially successful but eventually went out of business. He moved to California, where he started a new career in the tiny Burlingame Chamber of Commerce near San Francisco. Reed gradually moved up the hierarchy of the United States Chamber of Commerce, finally becoming general manager of the Los Angeles branch, America's largest in 1939. During this period, his views became progressively more libertarian. Apparently, it was in 1933 during a meeting with W.C. Millendore, an executive with the Southern California Edison, that Reed was finally convinced that the New Deal was completely inefficient and morally bankrupt. Reed was also profoundly influenced by his religious beliefs. His pastor, Reverend James W. Fifield, was minister of the 4,000-member First Congregational Church of Los Angeles, of which Reed was also a board member. Fifield ran a resistance movement against the social gospel of the New Deal, trying to convince ministers across the country to adopt libertarian spiritual ideals. This is one of the reasons why my wife finds Pastor Chuck Baldwin to be her favorite, but he just resigned the last couple of weeks. He's taken his entire family, moving from Florida to Montana. He goes, yep, it's a coming, so we're going to Montana. So that's a whole other, we're getting the pastor on. He'll be on the show in October. He's getting settled a little bit, and we'll have him talk about what he's doing. Now, during the period when he worked for the Chamber of Commerce, Leonard Reed, Reed was also deeply influenced by Albert J. Nock. Now, Nock, I remember there was an article, and I'll have it up on Freedom's Phoenix here, too. He wrote an article called Isaiah's Job. And this was, you know, the libertarian philosophy has been around for a long time. You know, somebody like Thomas Jefferson type, you know what I mean? Well, Isaiah's Job was talking about, Albert Nock was referring to, as I memory serves, I'll put it up and you can read it, it's really good, but he was referring to the prophet Isaiah. God was telling him, hey, man, you got to go preach to the choir out here. You know, you got people, there's people out there need the word. You need to go tell them what's what. And he goes, yeah, there's nobody. The government's taken over. It's, you know, the king's blah, blah. I'm not doing, I'd be the death of me. I'm not. And he goes and runs away and hides in some mountain thinking he's going to get away from God. Okay. God's like, oh, no. Get your butt back there, boy. You know, so he goes back and he says, of course, you got to preach to the remnant. This is where you start hearing Dr. Ron Paul always talking about the remnant. We didn't know how large the remnant was. We knew it was out there, but we didn't know how big. We didn't understand. We just got to go. We got to do what's right and preach the gospel of freedom. And you find out how big the remnant is. Well, that's what the article Isaiah's Job written back in, I think, the 30s or something. And what Albert J. Nock, N-O-C-K, he's telling the story of how one evening last autumn, I sat long hours with a European acquaintance while he expounded a political economic doctrine which seemed sound as a nut and in which I could find no defect. At the end, he said with great earnestness, I have a mission to the masses. I feel that I am called to get the ear of the people. I shall devote the rest of my life to spreading my doctrine far and wide among the population. What do you think? An embarrassing question in any case, and doubly so under the circumstances, because my acquaintance is a very learned man, one of three or four really first-class minds that Europe produced in his generation. And naturally, I, as one of the unlearned, was inclined to regard his slightest word with reverence amounting to awe. Still, I reflected, even the greatest mind cannot possibly know everything, and I was pretty sure he had not had my opportunities for observing the masses of mankind, and that therefore I probably knew them better than he did. So I mustered courage to say that he had no such mission and would do well to get the idea out of his head at once. He would find that the masses would not care two pins for his doctrine and still less for himself. Since in such circumstances, the popular favorite is generally some Barabbas. I even went so far as to say, he is a Jew, that his idea seemed to show that he was not very well up on his own native literature. He smiled at my jest and asked what I meant by it, and I referred him to the story of the prophet Isaiah. And it goes on, and the point that he was making, he kind of came to, he shifted his position back and forth, and the bottom line was this. It's important to preach to the choir. It's important to keep the remnant alive. It's important to keep them aware of each other. It's important to keep the doctrine alive. Freedom always wins in the end. It just gets messy first. And the point that God was making to Isaiah, you go preach to the remnant. You go out there because they need you. I need you to make sure that they stay consolidated. They stay aware of each other's presence, because there will come a time, and when that time happens, it will be a flood. We need to be ready. Well, Knock, this article and this line of thought had a big impact on Leonard Reed and created FEE, Foundation for Economic Education, enormously popular freedom libertarian think tank for a long time, since World War II. Well, the head of that, a guy named Lawrence Reed, is our keynote speaker at the Freedom Summit this year, first weekend in December. FreedomSummit.com. FreedomSummit.com. Go there and you'll see great speakers, of which inheritor of the organization, and I heard him speak in Michigan. I was at speaking at a thing, and he was a speaker, and I just go, wow, you know, this guy would be great. And it'd be good to kind of resurrect FEE. He knew head of FEE, and I could see why. And I'm glad to be able to keep that heritage going, that tradition. So we're going to promote that. But Leonard Reed also had an influence on a lot of people. And one of the gentlemen, he just died here in the last couple of years at the age of 94 or 5, I think. He was in his 90s. His name was Chet Anderson, and he started a group called the Economic Discussion Group. I'll be speaking there tomorrow night, and my focus will be immigration. Now, Chet was far more libertarian, more Leonard Reed type, but, you know, with his passing, and there's a lot of good hardcore anarchist libertarians there, but you know, that's also a lot of Republican politicos and so on, so I'm not going into, you know, totally favored territory. It's going to be, man, I'm going to take the position on, you know, the freedom stance on SB 1070 and what it really does and national idea. I'll go through all, but they're not going to like it. I know. We're going to have some fun. Now, two Saturdays ago, for 2.5 hours, Mark J. Victor, my partner in the Freedom Summit and criminal defense attorney, you may have heard on the show before, I was gone for Labor Day weekend. It was Labor Day weekend. I was gone in California on vacation. And Pal Gamble, senior editor of Freedom's Phoenix, he ran the meeting and had Mark speak. It was fantastic. I just finished watching it last night. It took me all day in the morning and during the day, and last night I just sat down and finished it. I'm so proud of Mark. You know, he does such a good job, and he really gets down to the base fundamentals of freedom. I have the link up there on today's site, and it's part 9. There's like 13, I think, and it's part 9. In part 9, he talks about immigration and him defending people that are violation of immigration being here and so on, because they got caught up in some, you know, drug war thing, criminal whatever, something. And it's fantastic to hear him speak in the position that he takes, but it's going to cause controversy, and it did at the summit. Oh, it got interesting. It went back and forth. And, of course, he talked about the drug war, FIJA, the baseline killer, checkpoints. And he's seeing all of this. It's the same thing. It's all based on, we have such an enormous government based on all the controls that we're trying to do. And the sharing of the information, all these organizations, all these think tanks, for years, for decades, for centuries, for millennia. There's one thing that just really gets in the craw of those that want to control us, all the monarchs, all the dictators, all the governments, is us being able to share information directly without having to go through a pastor, a preacher, a dictator, a talking head on television. That's what we're going to be talking about when we come back, keeping it free. We'll be right back.